Deloge Law Group. Immigration experts who are so committed to your success that they'll only take your case if they think they can win. The Deloge Law Group has already helped thousands of people from all over the world to obtain legal status and make Canada their home. Whether you're currently in Canada or abroad, the Deloge Law Group will assist you with any immigration matter in the most expeditious and cost-efficient manner. It's time to call Canada home. Go to Deloge.ca. That's DESLOGES.ca.
Even the kids are loving it here.
Anyway,
all right. It's so hard to interrupt the Blind Boys of Alabama, but it's worth it. Heralded by Deepak Chopra as an emerging spiritual leader for the next generation. All right, let's get the correct pronunciation. Ilan Divan? Okay, can we get his... actually, I have to turn his mic on. Yeah, there we go. Ilan Divan. That's, like, the most Hebrew name that I know.
Isn't it? It's actually a place in the Bible. So Divan is actually a place in Jordan, present-day Jordan, but it's not a very common name, actually.
Oh, it's not?
No, not a common name.
So when I went to Jordan... I flew out of Eilat, so I did the whole Jordan thing, and you go see, what's the Temple of Doom thing or whatever it is?
Indiana. Petra.
Petra. Whatever it's called.
Close.
I went to see Petra, not the band. And then I flew out of Eilat back up to Tel Aviv, and I was questioned for 2.5 hours.
Because you were
because
in Jordan.
Because they saw the Jordan stamp.
Right.
What's going on with that, man?
When was that? What year was that?
Oh, it was 7 years ago.
Ooh. You know, the political situation, man. It's still not easy. Hasn't been easy.
No.
And, yeah, it's just part of the scene, Middle East.
And somebody, I remember when I was at Tel Aviv, somebody said they were going through some, they pulled aside and going through their clothing and their suitcase and everything. And the guy goes, it's American, of course, this is profiling, man. And the guy goes, the security person goes, welcome to Tel Aviv.
Exactly.
We don't care if it's profiling. Yeah. We just want to know if you're going to do something stupid.
We don't need no stinking badges.
Yeah. Anyway, your story really starts with ice cream. And that's so apropos for my show because one of our corporate sponsors is Chapman's Ice Cream.
Love Chapman's, yes.
They're the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
See the segment?
Yes.
So let me get this straight. You're out on a date,
mm-hmm.
right? First of all, you're in the Army. You got a, what is it, a 2-3 year stint?
3 years.
Three years for all guys over there, from over there. Mm-hmm. They got to be in the Army for 3 years. You come back on a little leave.
Right.
And you're out having ice cream with some hottie.
Mm-hmm.
And during the thing, he was like, you know, can we just go, let's go over there instead of here. So you go to a different place.
Yes. Well, actually, we were going to go have lunch.
Okay.
So the deal was we were going to go have lunch in this promenade, this open promenade place in Jerusalem. And I was all excited. I'd, you know, been in the Army for 3 weeks, on home leave now for a couple of days. And so we're out to have lunch. And she turns to me and she says, Ilan, forget about lunch. Do you mind if we grab ice cream instead? And I said, sure. I mean, I couldn't care less about the ice cream or the lunch. I was there for her.
Heck yeah.
And so we go down the street, 50 yards down the street, turn left on one of the side streets, and we sit down and we're having our ice cream. And it's a beautiful day, kind of like today here in Oakville, Toronto, 24, 25 degrees.
Yeah.
September in Jerusalem. So, you know, kids are coming home with their backs, you know, straddling their backpacks and moms pushing strollers and, you know, street performers in the background with some jazz and... Maybe Blind Boys. I don't know if the Blind Boys were there, but
they thought they were in Petra, but, you know.
So, you know, just a beautiful, picturesque day. We're flirting and flirting with each other, and all of a sudden, you know, boom, there's a thud, and it comes from right up the road from where we just walked, and we're looking at each other. And before our mouths could find words and process what was going on, there was a second explosion, and now I realize something's wrong. The soldier in me kicks in. And I kind of reach out in a protective gesture, not even knowing what I was going to do. And as I do that, there's a third explosion. And this third explosion happened, I kid you not, right next to us, maybe 5 or 10 yards away, where the only thing separating us from this explosion is the very corner of the ice cream place where we're sitting. So thank God for Jerusalem stones or these big stones. That's the only thing protecting us from this third blast. And so I take, you know, well, first there's... I remember this kind of vividly. There is this eerie silence followed by just, you know, shrill, you know, screams and these shrieks of terror, and people are scattering and running in different directions. And it was what you'd expect. It was mayhem, pandemonium, terror, chaos. And I just take Ayelet's arm and we're running in the opposite direction. And as we do, it dawned on me, maybe, you know, I'm a soldier, maybe this is a diversion. Maybe it's a diversion to get all the people running away from the blast into a fourth blast.
Sure, like they did in Omagh in Ireland.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I'm thinking about that as we're running, but it's too late for, you know, too late for that. And so we run and we hide ourselves in this little alleyway, and we stay there with a couple of other civilians that managed to find some refuge over there. And the adrenaline's pumping, and we're a little bit out of breath, and we're just, you know, shaken by the whole thing. And within minutes, you know, in Israel, unfortunately, you know, the ambulances and people are just too well accustomed to this. So within minutes, the ambulances arrive, and the bomb squads descend upon the scene, and they cordon off things, and they make sure everything is safe and secure, and they get on the megaphones maybe after 5 or 10 minutes and say, okay, you can leave. It's safe. So I take this girl home. Her name was Ayelet. We go home. I drop her off, you know, and what do you say after a first date like that? So I say to her, you know, how's that for a first date?
Yeah, seriously.
And we sort of hug, and then I go home to my parents, and this is before the cell phone age, so you really didn't know what was going on. News wasn't traveling that fast, so I got home and I opened the TV, and it turns out this was a triple suicide bombing in downtown Jerusalem, where 180 people were injured, many severely. Five people were killed, two of those five at the very restaurant, the very patio, and likely the very table where we sat moments before making the switch for ice cream. So literally, if it wasn't for ice cream, I would not be sitting here today having this conversation
incredible,
with you.
Incredible stuff. And how do you, I mean, obviously this is the key part of your story, but, you know, how does someone experience something like that and not allow that to be a pivotal moment in their life? How do you sit there and go, holy jumping, we were just in that spot. That spot mm-hmm. blew up. Now I got to treasure life more than I ever have before.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened. There's a saying that, you know, coming to terms with your own mortality is the beginning of spirituality and the spiritual adventure. And that was certainly the case for me. And I said to myself, Elon, you know, there's a mixture of emotions, but one thing I took out of this experience is I said, if I'm alive, I want to believe there's a purpose. And so I really wanted to believe, and I need to believe there's a purpose, and I'm going to make every day and every week count, and I'm going to pursue this purpose, and I'm going to live it.
Okay, but were you a, I don't know, how do I say this? Were you a jerk and a sloth before this?
Yes.
Were you really?
Yeah, well.
Because you don't, I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing where you go, look, you were this enthusiastic about life before the bomb.
Yeah, it was just me, I guess. But, you know, all I was interested then was going clubbing and you know, getting out and just the mundane things. And I still was afterwards. Don't get me wrong. I still am today. But it definitely...
Wait, you still club?
Bar hop, maybe. I skipped going out last night for the show.
Good, good. I've made that mistake once. Remember that, Tim?
Ooh,
not good.
Yeah.
Speak quiet.
Anyway, so transformation in your world looked like what?
Well, transformation in my world looked like saying, you know, going after this sense of purpose and realizing that life is short and I need to find and really honor my purpose. And so I went out and after the army, I finished the army and I went out to London, England, and that's where I studied. I did my BA over there. And I realized, you know, I thought I was going to be a diplomat, but I realized I had this passion for spirituality and for all things spiritual. I was reading up, you know, all these books, which was coming from nowhere for me. You know, Deepak Chopra's Seven Spiritual Laws of Success and the Celestine Prophecy and doing yoga and meditation. And there was nothing in my background and my experience to warrant that. So it was something I gravitated towards. And I realized that I had this passion, but then what do you do with it, right? You know, it's not exactly the way to make a living. It's a nice hobby. So, you know, after that, I finished my BA and I went out to New York. And I figure, you know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Got a great job.
I've heard that.
Yes, it may be true. I got a good job in marketing, actually. I was in the marketing world on 55th Street and 5th Avenue doing marketing for Lowe's Cineplex, the big movie theater company. And it wasn't easy to get the job. But this sense of purpose and just that this wasn't the right fit for me, it was just nagging at me. So 2 months into that, I quit. And I went to my boss and I said, listen, I'm leaving my job, and I had this whole career path set. They wanted to promote me and all that. And I said, I'm going to study archaeology. I didn't even, that's what I thought I wanted to study.
See, I knew we were going to get back to Indiana Jones.
And there it is, yes. That's what I was called for a while, Indy, yes. When I went to study archaeology, my friends called me Indy. They had no idea what I was doing, and neither did I, to be honest, because I was trying to figure out what exactly I was passionate about. So I studied archaeology at McGill and comparative ancient civilizations, and that led me to a master's at Brandeis in anthropology, and anthropology of religion. And that led me to another master's at Harvard in comparative religion. And only after doing all that, I realized what I was really doing was mapping thousands of years of human experience and finding patterns for how people, you know, find their callings and sort of find their spark and leave their mark on the world, how people grow and develop and find their inner gifts and their treasures and share it with the world. And so I packaged that and codified that, all that sort of knowledge and experience, into a system called initiation.
Okay, so that's a great summation of where we're heading in this conversation. But I have to stop. Before we get down that road, I want to just throw out the proverbial jerk question.
Yes.
Dude, if I'm trying to put food on the table and I'm struggling and I can barely pay the bills, I don't have time to read Deepak, Tupac, or anything.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm not going to go to a freaking seminar or watch Oprah or I don't know. She's not even on anymore. I'll show you how old I am. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't register for most people who are just trying to put bread on the table.
Yes.
So the closest thing I've seen is these poor, broke, desolate people that I know. And that just sounds judgmental the way I said that. But anyway, that's their case. They end up going to a prosperity gospel church run by a white guy. A rich white guy who's selling hope.
Right.
And they go, okay, so in order to maybe get a little better luck with God, I need to put some coin in the offering. And it's a lottery system.
Yeah, yeah.
Spiritual lottery system. Tim, am I saying this right?
I think so. And you can get a jet, too.
Yes, there's a guy who now wants a jet for 54
million.
I read
million. About that, yeah.
Preacher.
Yes.
Anyway, so I'm rambling, but my point is, dude, most people are too busy to care about this stuff.
Well, yes, and I think certainly there's a hierarchy of needs. And if your basic needs aren't being met, like you're hungry, then yes, you're not going to be caring about spirituality because you have to have your basic needs met. But most of us, thankfully, in this country and in North America that have our basic needs met and we're working, but we're looking for more, there is more we can do. And the way I like to approach it is I ask people, you know, what's the biggest, most important relationship you have in your life? And so, Drew, what is it for you? What's the most important relationship you have in your life?
Well, Tim is pointing at himself.
Tim, that's
but that is not my most important relationship with my kids.
Okay. Well, I would say that's not it's not really or
oh,
shouldn't
wait, with
be.
With myself?
There you go. And the reason for that is...
Nice, Drew.
See, because I am going to be with myself longer than any other person.
No.
Oh.
It sounds selfish.
Good try.
It sounds selfish and it sounds counterintuitive, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
If you want to give your kids and the people you love in your life a better deal, you have to work on yourself because everything you do is an expression of who you are. And if you want to enhance the expression, you have to enhance the source of that expression, which is yourself. So if you want to enrich the relationship, if you want to enrich your job, you have to grow yourself. So, you know, leadership... you know, earning more, success, whatever it may be, starts with the self. And I think we all have it wrong when we say, you know, it's when I get the promotion or when I get, you know, the added paycheck or I have the right relationship, the right car, then everything's going to fall in order. We're looking for external things to change inner realities. But the truth is that only changing our inner reality can we start changing the circumstances of our outer reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to work on ourselves first. That's that.
What's the number one way that you actually changed that then changed your world?
As a result of the whole...
Of all the stuff you've been processing, from Indiana Jones movies to ice cream.
Well, we're all changing, man. I'm still changing. I got a lot to learn, I'll tell you that. But I think...
Can I just, while you're thinking, let me just share
what
I'm thinking. Mm. About how I've changed, I think I've changed. I recognized a little bit more of my ego agenda. And part of my ego agenda starts with V, victim. I spent decades playing the role of victim and not even knowing it. And once I saw that, oh, man, that was... First of all, it was really hard not to keep bashing myself and go, dude, stop being such a suck. But then inevitably, I started to like myself and I was able to practice compassionate, non-judgmental self-awareness. That's my story. What's your story?
Well, that's a great story, and I think that's really... You kind of sum it up beautifully because...
Well, that's the end of our time with Ilan Divan.
There's a little bit more. No, that it really is because, you know, the process, when I talk about initiations, the whole idea of transforming, what we're transforming is we're all attached to certain things that we identify with.
I'm sneak a little closer to the mic here, Ilan.
So we're all attached to certain things that we identify with. And what happens is, the ego holds all that together because it holds your identity and who you are. And you attach yourself to those identifications because it holds you together. And every now and then through what I call an initiation or something transformational shakes up your world. It shakes you to awake you. And I think what really needs to happen is exactly that, where your ego needs to be broken or pierced so that you can, you know, sort of break the form so you can change it and enhance it and grow it. And the ego is what keeps us from growing. So the ego needs to be broken. And I think, you know, whether biblically the whole experience of exile, transformation, renewal for the Jewish people, which starts from the patriarchs, you know, Abraham, Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, they all
and
have
Steve
as well.
Yep.
Which Steve is that? Steve Jobs.
Yeah. He's in there, wasn't he?
Yeah, that apple of temptation.
Yes. So I think, you know, we all have to learn how to, you know, how to experience pain, struggle, challenge, adversity, and keep positive and be changed by that because that's the only way to grow. The whole thing with the law of attraction that really ticks me off is that, you know, imagine you're getting everything that you want. That does the only way for people to grow, just like when you go to the gym, is pain. When your muscles are in pain, when they're starting to shake and shudder, that's when they're growing. For the soul to grow, for a human being to grow, you've got to experience adversity, challenge, something uncomfortable. Otherwise, you can't. And so I've been going through that a lot in various ways, you know, to answer your question. And so I've been humbled a lot. My sense but I think it keeps going back to what you said, which is we need to reach a point where we take full responsibility and ownership for our lives and stay away from the victim mentality because we need to own our life. We need to accept the circumstances that whatever happens, but still strive for whatever we're striving for.
Okay, so whatever you're on about, all I know is really needed. By the way, you can shrink that, like just push this part. There you go.
Cool.
However it feels good for feels you, good. Man. You know, we're talking about his headphones.
Thank you for that, Drew.
Yes, thanks for the comment.
It is radio.
Anyway, crap, what was I saying? Oh, in this world so needs what you're on about because I pick on these millennials all the time, man, because this snowflake culture is driving me mental.
Yes.
And a great example of this was a video I saw the other day from a guy called the Political Cowboy. And he did this whole bit about, I stopped into this truck stop. I got myself a breakfast sandwich. It was at a truck stop. A breakfast sandwich. You know what it tasted like? It tasted like a breakfast sandwich at a truck stop. It was horrible. And then he tried to take another bite. He said, no, it was the worst thing I've ever tasted. You could taste the tire tread marks on the thing. You know, it was just disgusting. Tried to give it to his dog. Didn't do it. No. And so what did he do? He threw it out. He didn't go back into the store and ream the guy that sold him. He didn't call up the company that made the breakfast sandwich. No. He realized this is not a good purchase. He threw it out. He moved on. He didn't scream and cry and dance and try to get on YouTube for whatever. I don't know. He ended up being on YouTube. but it was because of his anti-princess mentality.
Right.
Am I clear at all? Is this
I get it.
Sense?
Yes.
In other words, people, we need you, man.
I'll tell you what the problem is because this is exactly what I'm heading to what I'm working on, and I'm building an institute which is going to deal with this problem because I think we're facing an epidemic of not only stress, depression, anxiety, and it's all mindset. The problem, the fundamental problem that I think young people today, but everybody is conditioned in some ways, that if you're born in the internet age, if you're born with a cell phone, then you've been conditioned to believe that everything happens super fast, and it does. You want to know something, you Google it. You want to go somewhere, you Uber it. You want to date, you swipe. Alexa, Siri, it's bam, bam, boom, you got it. So our outer world is moving super, super fast. But our inner worlds take time to percolate, mature, you know, ripen, find their natural rhythm and their beat. So there's this fissure, this gap between outer world and inner reality. And how do you reconcile that? So that's the cause of a lot of stress for young people.
So good.
And then they've got these expectations because they're comparing themselves. And as I think Theodore Roosevelt said, you know, comparison is a thief of joy. So when you're comparing yourself to former generations that had it different, and when you're leaving college with debt, and you're underemployed because boomers aren't retiring, and wages are stagnant, but housing prices are going up, and you can't afford rent, you got to live with your parents, and you can't get a job, it's tough.
They're all listening. All three
true,
of
right?
these millennial princesses here are listening.
But how can you afford? If I can barely afford a place. Listen, I graduated, and here's the humbling thing for me. I graduated from Harvard and Brandeis, two master's degrees at age 30 or whatever it was. This was in 2008. I couldn't get a job. This was, of course, at a bad time, economic downturn sure. and all that. So I get it. So I think a part of it is that millennials need to learn to be more resilient, more adaptable, have more grit. So there is a mindset. They are going to have to work a whole lot harder, and comparing to the other generations isn't going to help. But they are. We need to at least acknowledge that they've been conditioned because they've grown up with technology in a way that's detrimental to their mindset and dealing with the world.
Honestly, we could just stop right there. Well, that's the Drew Marshall Show. Thank you for tuning in. That was gold, man. Really, really gold. Let me just tell people what the heck is going on here and sort of recap. Where's my page? Oh, it's over here. Ilan Divani is an author, social entrepreneur, speaker, success coach. His website is ELAN, that's Ilan, and then Divan, DIVON.com. By the way, am I really pronouncing that right? Ilan
yes.
Divan?
Yes, Ilan Divan, but you can call me Steve.
You can call me Steve. His story begins at age 20 after surviving a mass suicide bombing in Jerusalem. The experience compelled Ilan to leave behind his family and homeland and later forsake a lucrative job in Manhattan to pursue a budding passion for ancient wisdom and spirituality. 20 years and two master's degrees later, and after launching a global social venture on NASDAQ, Ilan has packaged his findings into a philosophy, a workshop series, and a new book called The Initiation to be published next year, I think. So we've got a lot to talk about with this guy, but let's just recap again. Army, girl, yep. Ice cream, bomb blast, serendipity. Then you started digging,
mm-hmm.
literally and figuratively.
Yes.
Money, archaeology, anthropology, religion at Harvard. At Harvard. I think I said Harvard.
Harvard College.
Where you go to school? I go to Harvard. Harvard. And then all of a sudden, the next step is this golden thread of initiation.
Yes.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Golden thread of initiation.
I like that.
What the heck is that? It sounds like some new drug.
It should be. Maybe that's something I gotta work on that. So initiation, that is the what I've discovered from all this experience, from my own experience, from my own life, and from studying literally thousands of years or mapping thousands of years of human experience. And what I found, and I'll share a story to kind of contextualize it, and it starts here in Toronto. So the story goes from Jerusalem to Boston and here to Toronto. 7 years ago, I was invited to teach at a course called, at a program called the Ve'ahavta Street Academy. And they're at George Brown College. And it's a beautiful course that offers homeless individuals or people that are marginally housed an 8 or 9 week intensive university program as a way to get them, use education as a way out of poverty and off the streets. Brilliant stuff.
Hmm.
And so you've got people coming in and, you know, experts and business people teaching business, entrepreneurship, writing skills, communication skills. I just published a book on world religion. They said, come on, Ilan, can you please come and teach a class on world religion? I said, sure, my pleasure, honor. And I went in and I did it. Now, preparing for the class, I had 3 hours. I thought, there's no way you can cover world religion in all its complexity and its richness and variety in 3 hours minus a 10-minute, you know, smoke and pee break.
Yeah.
Let alone.
Unless they do those at the same time.
Even then, sure. It might be tough.
It's still tough.
Still tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I figured, all right, I'm going to focus on the stories to personalize it, the stories of the founders. So I, you know, chose Moses, Abraham, Jesus, Muhammad, and Buddha. Those were the five. And we're, you know, going to teach and talk about the stories, the personal stories of these individuals. And I believe as I was at the story of Buddha, he was, the slides are behind me, and he's meditating under the Bodhi tree when I have this epiphany, literally. And I realize that every single religious founder, without exception, was homeless for a period of time. And it was in their homelessness, in their separation from family, friends, community, culture, comfort zone, in the wilderness of life, literally, metaphorically, psychologically, that they found three things. They found, first and foremost, God. More importantly, they found themselves, their higher calling, their talents, their gifts, their, you know, their treasure. And as a result, they founded a new religion. So I took the germ of this idea and I said, what if the most successful, influential, innovative people on the planet throughout history went through a similar process? And lo and behold, that is what I found, that people had to separate from defining things in their lives, from people, places, powers, and ideas that define them, because whatever defines you also confines you. And if you're going to follow somebody else's path, you will never fulfill your potential. And we're living in a world today where so much of us conform to what other people, the models and the beliefs of other people. And so think about it this way. You know, imagine that when you're born, somebody down, or when you're growing up, someone downloads into your mind a playlist. But it's not a playlist of songs per se. It's a playlist of beliefs and ideas and models, mental models. And all your life, you grow up seeing the world and experiencing yourself through the prism, but really the prison of these models and beliefs. And that's what happens to each and every one of us. And our journey through life is to unshackle ourselves from these, or break through these mental models, to be able to find out who we are and what our gifts are, so we can bring it to the world. And that's what an initiation is. It's about breaking through mental models that limit us, so we can actually access who we are and bring that to the world.
Okay. Hold on a second. I've the spiritual gift of pessimism.
Love it. And I love that.
It has not served me well, but it's won me a few beers. Over the years of the, you know, positive thinking and change the way you think and, you know, all this kind of stuff, whether it's Deepak Chopra or Tony Robbins or Eckhart Tolle, who I saw last, what was it, Sunday night?
Sunday.
Oprah Winfrey, Jordan Peterson even. We got to put him in this category now. Or even Russell Brand, put him in this category now. Over the years, I've sort of gone, I was about to should on myself. Or poo-poo on myself. It's hard for me to pay attention too long is what I'm trying to say. I used to say I'm an idiot, but now it's just hard to pay attention for too long. And with all this self-helpy stuff, I kind of went, yeah, that's for the Keeners and for the Browners and Browners. Remember that phrase? for the people that are just trying to make it in the corporate world and climb the corporate ladder and be all successful. And I'm just not that passionate about being successful, as you can tell.
Wonderful. Doing great, Jerry.
Thank you. But then I found myself sitting in an empty house, having numerous fractured relationships, realizing I was the common denominator and was desperate enough, finally, to reach out to some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I started seeing things differently. It was like putting on glasses for the first time after you've been denying that you need glasses. This is a really long way of saying, I don't like this crap, but I need this crap.
Yes. and that's I think, how a lot of people feel. Nobody wants, you know, we just want to deal with our lives and define success as we want to.
Yeah.
But we need to. There's a beautiful saying, the only way out is in. And the way the world is developed right now is that we're looking to solve inward issues, because our life, the life of that we experience, is an inward life. Our emotions are inside us.
Yeah.
But we're trying to solve whatever is going on inside through outer, you know, we can't solve inner problems with outer or external things. And so we're consuming, we're a culture of consumerism, where we're consuming stuff, we're consuming things, but that doesn't satisfy us. And then you look at someone like the tragedy of Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade. They had everything, and yet it wasn't enough, because all that stuff, man, all the fame, the glory, the great food. There's only so much great food you can eat. There's only so many nice cars you can drive in. That doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And you've got to turn inwards. You have to.
Okay, but again, Tim, I want you to a part of this conversation because you and I both grew up 30 plus years in the Jesus scene, right? Mm-hmm. And that's been our tribal conditioning.
Yes.
And as we're listening to this, we're going, ooh, well, maybe not you. So let me know if it is you as well. Ooh, it sounds too selfish and all you need is Jesus. Obviously, these other people had a hole in their heart, a Jesus-shaped hole in
yes.
their heart, and all you need is Jesus. And I'm certainly not, please hear me, folks, I'm not shouting that down or laughing at that. I mean, there's a bit of tribal stuff that I do sort of laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's saying, everything inside of me is bucking because it's like, ooh, it sounds too selfish. You said it at the very beginning, it sounds selfish. Why don't you just let go and let God?
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
Do you relate to that?
Totally. And it's been a journey for me, too. Like, you know, I used to always, I think, very selfishly, ironically, that it could only be, you know, the God that I believe in. And being introduced to different world religions, you realize that there is a common denominator amongst them, as it's been let known. But interestingly enough as well, it's already been stated that, you know, you have to get broken. And one of the common things is finding God. So whether we're reaching out to God or reaching out to ourselves, both of those have to happen according to what's been said thus far.
Right. Okay.
And so I don't have a problem with that. That makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, too many times it's all about Jesus. And not to say he's not key for me, but we're part of the equation too. And I think that we need to be mindful of that.
It's been so much all about Jesus that it almost inadvertently has turned the I would say, theology bad, and it has communicated poorly this message, and you're a piece of garbage.
Yeah, that, but also, right? I think it also allows us to deny stuff.
Oh.
Well, I don't have to work because Jesus is going to do it. I think what? There is...
First of all, who talks like that?
You do on occasion,
okay.
off air. But yeah. I think people do that as well, that they will deny their part in their problem.
Yeah, okay. No, I love that. Because we are talking about blame shifting. Ultimately, right, Ilan, are we not talking about kicking blame shift in the butt?
Yes. It's about humility to be able to open yourself. It's about humility to be able to open yourself up to what is rather than what you want or how you want to, you know, your ego wants the world to be.
Yeah.
You know, we're so attached to certain ways of how the world should be that when reality forces us to see it differently, we resist that. And we've got to open to that.
Okay, I want to let everyone know something that, I would suggest maybe you check out because you may want to sign up for it. It's a bit of a workshop that Ilan is doing. It's on June 13th. Wait, that's this coming week, isn't
it? That's right, Wednesday. Wednesday.
So people can still sign up? What are they signing up for? When is it? Where is it? What are they doing? What are they going to learn? What's happening?
Well, they're signing up to change, transform their life. They're signing up to, it's on June 13th. 1091 Queen Street Eats, Sweat and Soda, amazing coffee.
Sweat and Soda?
Sweat and Soda. It's actually one of the best coffee shops out east on near the beaches.
Okay.
Friend
sure
of mine owns
sweet
it.
Sweet and Soda?
It's Sweat and Soda.
Okay. All right.
It's a beautiful space, and we're going to turn that into a whole workshop and give people what I call the initiation masterclass. So that's happening at 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. So come on after work. To Sweat and Soda, 1091 Queen Street East. What we're going to do over there is we're going to learn about the basics of change and transformation. We're going to learn about the basics of this whole concept of initiation. And then we're going to start really getting into it. And it's going to be a series that's going to run for the summer.
Okay, tease us and give away something for free. Learn us right now, something for free. Hook us with the nicest little tidbit you got when it comes to this stuff.
Okay. There's a lot of great ones, but let's start with this. Everyone's looking to change. And the one thing I can tell you with certainty about change and how change works, having studied really countless biographies and look and mapping human history and mythology for that matter, it can be summed up in one sentence, and it is this. People don't change by seeing the light. People change by feeling the fire, feeling the heat. Meaning, you can know exactly what you need to do in order to change. I mean, there's a lot of, but that doesn't make you do it. There's a lot of people that want to stop smoking, get a six-pack, land their dream job, do any number of things, but that doesn't get them to do it. I mean, knowledge is not power. Knowledge is power if it's acted upon consistently. And so the only way to create that fire that leads to change is you need a spark, right? A spark that lights a fire of committed action, and that spark comes from two sources in every individual and two sources only. Passion, but more importantly, pain. And everybody focuses on passion, of course, but it is our pain that evokes our passion. Our pain leads us to our passion. It is the driving force that gets us to our passion. And guess what? Even when you experience your passion, you're going to feel pain because you're going to feel the pain of disappointment, of failure. In fact, the litmus test of following your passion is when you keep failing at it, but keep following it. Then you know you found your passion. So pain, and I can dig deeper into why pain is so important. I mean, you look at iconic figures like Mahatma Gandhi. This guy was pained, right, by the injustice that was inflicted on his fellow countrymen because of British colonial rule. He was pained by his own experience of being thrown off a train in South Africa when he was studying for the bar over there because of the color of his skin. And that pain drove him and compelled him to become a leader of a nation. The same thing with Martin Luther King or with Mother Teresa, that was pained by what's going on in Calcutta, which is why it drove her to leave her home in Europe and go halfway around the world to set up soup kitchens and orphanages in that country. So it's pain that leads us to our passion, and people stay away from pain, but pain is where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wrote this down. I'd like everyone to pay attention. This is
use big letters?
This is my own aha moment.
Okay.
This is Drew aha-ing Drew. Ready? Just got really weird there.
Take on Drew. The ha-ha.
The passage of pain provides perspective.
Say it again, Drew.
Yes.
Pen drop.
Yeah, you can't drop the mics. They're too expensive. No. Say it again.
The passage of pain provides perspective.
A lot of pee-pee in there.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of peas.
Did you not have something intelligent to say earlier?
Wanted to say something. And you didn't let me say it.
Go for it now.
Well, we had mentioned quickly passing, but I understand we had lots of other stuff, Bourdain and Spade, and their recent passing. And yes, they had everything. But what I want to know is there's also the question of mental illness. What part does that play? Because it wasn't just that they, my life, I have everything, whatever. I think there was a lot more going on there. So what part does that play?
That plays a big part. I was talking yesterday to my sister about this, and we were having an interesting conversation. And it's right. A lot of, there are some people that certainly there's a chemical imbalance. It's a biological issue. So you're predisposed towards depression, anxiety, and there's a spectrum. But what we're lacking today, which exacerbates the problem and the reason why suicide rates have doubled and have gone up by 30% since 1999, according to the CDC, and why the diagnosis of depression has moved from 27 years old to 14, the average age.
Jeez.
It's crazy. We are facing an epidemic. And the reason is, and I'll sum this up with another story, is human connection. And I'll share a story. So I have another friend, Mana, and she was walking in Toronto. She's a Persian lady walking in Toronto, beautiful soul. And she sees a homeless guy, and he's all haggard, and he's smelly, and you can see he's just in a rough place. And he's kind of, she notices how people are doing their best to avoid this guy. And somehow he sees something about her, he blocks in on her, he goes towards her, and he's kind of persistent. So she says, "What can I do for you? Can I offer you some money? Can I get you some food?" And he says, "No, but can I get a hug? I haven't had human contact in like a couple of years." And that is a sad, sort of statement on the current state of our world, I think, certainly in the Western world, where I think we've outsourced human connection to our phones and to, social media and to all these other things, when what we need and crave as human beings is support and connection, because especially when we're going through something difficult, we need human interaction. And when you don't have that, when you don't really have a village, metaphorically, to support, then it becomes very difficult. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of the, you know, the spike in depression, suicide rates, and so forth.
Okay. Just before, like, we're almost out of time here, which is, man, it's gone so fast. Initiation.
Yes.
Just take that word, because this is the initiation workshop series that's coming up next week, June 13th. And, of course, if you want more information, you can go to elandivon.com, E-L-A-N-D-I-V-O-N.com. The phrase initiation, to me, I'm missing the connect. So when I think of initiation, I think of, to be quite honest, playing football and some of the dumb things we did to the rookies on the team, myself included. When I think of initiation, I think of initiation rites or ceremony. I remember when my son turned 13, I had all of the men that have had the biggest impact on my life. We gathered in a room and we spoke wisdom to my son. He said it was amazing. 13-year-old, loved it. Now, I know in your faith background, the Jewish tradition, you guys are pretty good at initiation ceremonies.
Yes.
You're so good at this stuff. You have like 43 holidays every year.
That's right.
Right?
Something like that. Yeah. 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 It's amazing when you're working for a Jewish organization, because then you're off like half the year.
So help me understand the initiation. How does that tie in with personal growth, awakenings, change, becoming a better you, all that kind of stuff?
Thank you for that question, because that is, it strikes at the heart of what it's all about. So initiations are essentially like rite of passages, like a rite of passage. And in traditional societies, as you just mentioned, we still have them today, but in traditional societies, there were rites of passage that help prepare and initiate someone for the next stage of life. How do you turn a boy into a man, a girl into a woman? How do you turn a civilian into a warrior, or a chief, or a civilian into a chief? There were rites of passage that kind of prepared the psyche for that and opened someone up to that new experience. And today in our modern world, we are lacking, we've sort of done away with these rites of passage. College used to be a rite of passage. Unfortunately, it's not today. And so the problem is people graduate college and they're not prepared for the world that they're entering. And so the initiation is about providing people with a roadmap, tools, mindset, and strategies to be able to initiate themselves into the next stage of their life, or to into their greatest self, if you will. So why I called it initiation, it's because the whole process of initiation mirrors a traditional rite of passage, which involves separating from something, your status quo. In that separation, which is very difficult, there's challenge, there's testing, there's pain. Through that, there's transformation, and then there's a return, but as a different self, a renewal, and a return as a higher being, or as a different kind of person with a different status. And so I chose that word very carefully, because the whole sequence of initiation mirrors a rite of passage.
Sometimes I'm in the right pocket for this, and I'm like devouring it, and other times I just go, wow. This is so much to process. And I think that speaks to the fact that you've got to be pliable. You've got to be in a shapeable zone or space.
Right.
Because if you're not teachable, really, is what we're talking about, this is just it's a waste of money, and it's going to bounce off you.
Yes. You got to, and that's the thing. You've got to really want it. And I think, and that goes back to the whole, you know, people don't change by seeing the light. People change by feeling the fire.
Dude, that was great. I love that.
You got to be so dissatisfied with your current status quo, with where you are in life. You got to be so irked about it, so angry and fired up about it, that you want to change. It's not, you don't want to change. You need to change.
Yeah.
And when you need to change, come and see me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the space that I've been in the last little bit. So, Ilan Divon. When are you heading back to, L.A.? I know you're cooking things up down there.
Yes, I am. I'm actually heading on the 18th, 18th to the 27th. Going to see Bryn.
Are you?
Seeing her in Malibu, yeah.
Good. Give her a smack in the head for me, please. Okay. Yeah.
And, cooking up a few things there. I think the goal, not I think, the goal is in 2019, after the book is released, setting up an institute and maybe based out there. But I'll be between Toronto here and doing my thing, doing the initiation.
Good for you.
The workshops, the presenting.
Do you have a temple that you hang out at?
A temple.
Hey, do you go to a synagogue?
I go to the beaches.
The beach.
That's nice. Pretty much it.
I love that. That's the best answer that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I've ever heard. I want to go back to, what was it called again? Indiana Jones place?
Petra.
Petra.
Petra, yes.
Except you can't go in anymore. You can't even walk in the front door. No.
Why? Because it's
I don't know, security or something, or it's eroding, or people are graffitiing or something.
Same thing with Machu Picchu. I hear that as well.
They really?
Like in 10, 20 years, they're going to close it off.
Wow. Yeah.
I want to see Hulk Hogan go there. Call it Macho Picchu. That was such a long way for nothing, wasn't it?
Wow.
What a horrible journey that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Randy.
Randy the Machu Picchu.
Dude, that was... I got to be honest. It's work. That's what it is. And if you're not there, you're not going to do it.
Right.
If you're there, you'll stink and do it.
Yes.
And you know, when I first came to a realization about this, I know we got to go here. Sorry, was when I did the Landmark course last year.
Right.
I didn't want to do it, and then when I was doing it, I realized I had to do it.
Heard about the Landmark? Yeah. Tried that the first course, and then I kind of left.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a bad instructor in San Diego.
It might have been, but this guy's not a bad instructor. Elan Divon, ELANDIVON.com. That's where you got to go, kids.